Accession number 32389, Mr. Heath Hunter, Reel 2. Now, we're talking about your time with the ATC and this this camp. Anything else go on at the camp or any other exercises you did there?
No, I don't think we did. We went through all the things that we did at ATC in the school. Here we were out of doors, and we had, as I said, we had sports day one day. I had to go home, I remember, because I wore a hole in my boots. I had to go home and get a new pair of boots, and of course I was allowed out. And
you enjoyed it, though?
Oh, yeah, it was great. I always wanted to be in the Air Force, and this to me was the Air Force, but it wasn't really.
Now, had you any navigation training with with the ATC?
Oh, no. In those days, it was they didn't have all the things they had later. They didn't have the electronic equipment. It was all taking star shots when it was night, sun shots in the day. Or dead reckoning. Most of it was dead reckoning. In fact, if you were flying over England, you flew down the railway line.
Did you start on work on that with the ATC, though, or was that something that was left?
No, you didn't do anything.
It just no simple navigation?
Simple navigation. Well, they showed us what you would use, but we never had the opportunity to use
any other training you remember with them?
No, there was no other training but that.
So, now, you're carrying on work. So you're at work, you're in the ATC, because you're quite busy then. So when do you actually get called up proper? I mean, you know, because you've been sent home to await call-up. Do you remember when you were called up? Was it still?
I'm not sure. I don't remember the date, that's obvious. But I think as soon as I was 16, or 8, couldn't have been 16, no.
18,
maybe, when you were officially called up. I remember going at one stage when
you were called up before Christmas?
Yeah. But I think before that, on one occasion, they had a, when they went round everybody that wasn't in, and you had to go and sign up. And I confused them all by being able to go there and give them my Air Force number. Although I hadn't gone to there, but I had a number from the very first. I had a number. 1675462.
So you were called round about your birthday, so that's round about November.
It was probably after Christmas.
After Christmas, right.
Because I was getting niggled, I'd been waiting so long, I thought I should be in the Air Force.
Now, we've worked out you were called up round about January 1943, so where were you sent to?
I was sent to ACRC in Lord's Cricket Ground, which wasn't being used as a cricket ground then. It was the receiving centre for aircrew. That was all aircrew, gunners, engineers, bombardiers, pilots.
And what about the journey down there? You went with a friend,
I went down with this other chap. I think we had a seat on the train even. Somebody kind of gave the two young men going to their deaths to give them a bloody seat. Oh, that's what I thought.
So what was your reception like when you get there? Because this is going into the RAF proper, you know. What's your first impression? You sort of walk through the gates of Lords or wherever.
You're scared stiff. Or I was. I think we all are. You're going into the unknown. You volunteered for it, but you don't know what you're going to get when you get there. Are we on? And so we were. And then and the second day, we then were issued with uniforms.
Now, you know the people who met you and sorted you out, were they sympathetic or was it barking? I don't mean barking mad, I mean just snapping and
No, you were going to live the Air Force life. There was no kindness at all. You had to get yourself from King's Cross Station to Lord's Cricket Ground yourself. You find your own way there. That was obviously your navigational skill came out then, you see. So we got there, marching the gate, and immediately through the gate, you were in the Air Force. And you're subject to their discipline and their bullying and shouting.
And there was that.
You've got that all the time.
So what about the kitty now? That was on the second day, was it?
Second day, I think, and we were kitted out.
And what did you get? Do you remember? Because there's a lot of kit they can give you.
Oh, we got everything. Shoes, socks, underpants, long johns, which I'd never worn in my life. Your trousers, one trousers, one jacket, one battle dress jacket. Collar, tie, or loose collars in those days. Collar, tie, a cap, a badge, a cleaning stick. And then you go and buy your own Duraglit to clean it. They didn't supply the cleaning material. That was your kit, overcoat.
Did it fit? You know, the bits that fit.
You'd say what size. Well, I know, as a boy, I had no idea what size I was. Would you, at that age? No, I didn't know. So they say, well, give him a medium or give him a large. And you put a large shirt on, it came down to your knees. That wasn't right. So they change it for you. It was all a bit hit and miss. But when they were dealing with thousands of people a day, it wasn't a bad job they did.
What about haircut?
That was probably the third day. They would come around and say, haircut, haircut. And you were not allowed to go to your own hairdresser or a hairdresser you knew. You had a tonsural artist there who was going to make a bloody mess of whatever you had. They made a mess of it. Short back and sides.
Now, I presume it was short back and sides was pretty well the fashion anyway, but was this a lot shorter?
A lot shorter.
Did you mind?
Well, I felt a bit disgusted at first, but everybody else was the same.
How short was it? I mean...
Well, they left your ears on, but they came very close. I mean, where here, I go up to here, they would go right up to here. It'd just leave you a top part on your head. The bit that was hidden by your cap, the rest of it looked bald. You sometimes see it today with the young fellows.
So very almost shaven on the sides, but just...
They didn't shave it, but it was...
Clip short.
Clip short.
Now, what about your accommodation? Were you in the flats nearby?
Yes.
Now, what were they like? Cause they were meant to be... Well, they were luxury apartments.
They were luxury flats.
What were they like?
Wonderful. But then, of course, we were sleeping about eight to a room. You didn't have a room to yourself. The one we went in, I can never remember the name of it. It was near Viceroy Court, but Viceroy Court was the hospital, and it was near there. But I don't remember the name. But it was an eight-story block of luxury flats. I mean, for the first time in my life, I saw a flat which had accommodation for a servant. And we realised this when in these two small rooms at the back of the flat, that... I suppose it was a hip bath where you sat in. He actually sat. There was a step in it which you sat on. And that was where the servant used to... Where the other bathroom was. In fact, years later, I got a towel rail from it, from the same place. They would put new stuff in, and somehow or other somebody got this and said, do you want it? I said yes, and I had it in the house for years, never connected it up. Then somebody else knew wanted one, so I gave it to him. But so that was my first sort of venture into the higher class of living.
And did they have carpets down and things like that?
No.
So they were just bare, weren't they?
There were bare rooms with Air Force beds in, which an Air Force bed, of course, was a steel frame thing. And you had three, what they call pallets, which were three sections, which you put on the bed. That was your mattress. And they gave you, three blankets. And being air crew, you got two sheets. And I had two sheets for the rest of my days in the Air Force.
Now, what about the food? Because, I mean, again, you'd had ATC food, but what did you think of the RAF food? Because they had that at the zoo, didn't they?
We were near the zoo. In fact, I had a paper aid when I was down there, we went to the zoo next to the monkey cages, and we were lined up outside, and the old monkeys were watching us.
Well, tell us about the paper aid, then. What is a paper aid in the RAF?
Paper aid is they bring out the whole flight, not only your flight, but 20 other flights, stack them up in the order they want them, and they suddenly somebody reads your name out, so you say Hunter 462, give them your last three, and march forward, salute, and get your 1 and 6 months. It was a pittance. You got to remember, we weren't getting much, and then you went back to your ranks, and you were marched off to do a lot more square bashing, and we did square bashing morning, noon, and night.
Let me just finish the food bit. What did you think of RAF food?
Bloody awful.
Now, why was it awful?
Because it was... I don't think it was cooked properly.
So it wasn't the ingredients?
They would give you things like something which I couldn't bear to eat. They give you heart. I couldn't eat a heart. I know what it does, and the mere thought of putting it in my mouth would... I'd be ill. So very often you went without your meals. Or ate the potatoes and peas which you had. And they were also putting stuff in your tea to stop you being rather sexy. bromide, I believe it was called. This, from a very early stage, they fed you this.
I suppose they were worried when you did have time, you didn't get much time to get. I once went to a cinema in the West End, and that's, I didn't think I could have afforded it, but I obviously did it. So they kept you off the streets.
Were you sure there was bromide in your tea, or was it a rumour? Because there's always this slight question. I mean,
I don't know. I've never worked that out.
But you believed it at the time.
At the time, everybody believed it. There was something in there. I really believe they did put stuff in. You had to keep you under control.
Now, tell me about the drill. I mean, you'd done a bit of drill. How was this drill in comparison?
Well, you've got hours and hours of it, 3 or 4 hours a day, just marching up and down, about turn, left turn, and then that's all. We did, when you were in this ACRC, you did nothing except drill. You didn't learn anything about the Air Force or anything like that. And then,
was there any bombing while you were there? I mean, because London's, I mean, I don't know.
There was bombing in London, but didn't come anywhere near us. I heard the sirens go a few times.
Now, how long were you there, do you reckon?
I think I was there, I should have been there 3 weeks, but I suddenly caught, I tell you, I got vaccine fever. I had so many.
Tell me about the vaccine, because
and vaccinations and inoculations, and I finished up with vaccine fever.
Now, what is vaccine fever?
Swine fever. It's like what pigs get. And you go in delirium, and they cart you off to hospital. I mean, they didn't come for me, but when they saw me, they took me away as well. So when I came out of hospital a week later, all my pals, made friends there, they'd be all gone. And I wasn't ever posted back to them. I never saw them again.
So how about you? Was it just a high temperature or any other?
High temperature, hallucination. It could be quite nasty.
And about in hospital about a week?
I was in hospital exactly a week.
Did they treat you, or did they just leave you?
I don't know how they treat me. All I can remember is some woman coming around making a bed for me.
So probably, basically, they were just monitoring you.
Monitoring, yeah. You sweat it out.
So you're there until what, February-ish? We're a bit dodgy with our dates, but we're not going to. They can look that up in somewhere else. Now, so where next?
Well, I was then posted. When I got back, it fairly quickly. By then I joined a new lot of people. I joined a week later in intake. I was then posted to Scarborough, ITW, Initial Training Wing.
Do you know which number?
17, I think.
They can check it, yeah.
And then that was on the South Bay, just above the outdoor swimming pool in Scarborough. Do you know Scarborough?
Not too well, no. But describe it for them, not me. So where were you billeted? Were you in hotels?
Yes, I suppose they were small
boarding houses.
No, they weren't boarding houses. They were better than that. I think they were small hotels on that south shore.
And were they also empty, bare boards?
Bare boards. First of all, I was in a room with four, and then I was able to get into a room with another chap I knew. They didn't mind me going because it meant they got a bit more room, and he got crowded out a bit because it was a small room. And then we started then. We used to be marched off. You'd have a set program. You did armaments, taking the machine gun to pieces.
Well, let's look at the armaments. Which machine gun were you working on?
I haven't the clue. A Lewis, I should think. A Lewis gun, yeah.
They have a little drum on top of it.
No, it wasn't that one. It was a little belt thing. Same as they would use in an aeroplane.
Browning. Now tell me about that. How far did... Because you're going to be a navigator. But how far did they take you with the Browning?
Well, they took me as far as firing one on the range. Also to take one to pieces blindfolded. You should be able to take out the breech block and reassemble it without seeing it, see? That's providing you were alive to do it in the back of the plane.
They didn't tell you that. That was part,
and how much shooting?
You only went once. You only fired one burst. God, I can't waste ammunition on clowns like you.
And was that from the ground?
Ground. Mm. Oh, we did never flew until we left England. Oh, yes, we did. Yes, we flew before that.
Did you have? Was it set up as a cockpit? As a
A turret.
A turret, thank you. Yeah. What you shot from, and were you
shooting at a target? No, I didn't do that till later. We just had a gun, and you fired the gun. Fired it at a target, you never knew whether you hit it or not.
Any other weapons training?
No. We went on guard. We did guard duties.
Hang on. Did you do any shotgun training?
Yeah, not shotgun training, but we did clay pigeon shooting.
That's what I mean. Sorry, tell me about that.
I think we did about 10 rounds of that. Yeah, we did that only once.
And did you realise what that was for?
Not the faintest idea. Have you any idea?
Well, it's meant to be for deflection shooting, so you learn to shoot ahead of things. I mean, rather than at them. But they didn't explain that to you then?
No.
That's interesting, they didn't explain
it. I thought it was just to see your coordination was okay. I realise what you're saying is right, but I was quite good at clear pigeon shooting.
Had you done it before?
No. But the only practice I'd ever had was with my pistol firing in the shoulder.
So you instinctively shot ahead, because you wouldn't hit it if you shot at it.
No, I did very well. I think I got 9 out of 10. So I was quite good at that.
So as far as you were natural at deflection shooting thinking about it?
Yeah, without thinking about it.
Any other... So that's that. A bit of on the Browning, a bit of clay pigeon, one session of clay pigeon shooting. Oh. That's all for weapons.
And you remember we were there for 12 weeks.
Right. So now what else were you doing then? So that's the weapons side of things. What else?
We also did navigation.
Now, this is going to be important, really. So how do they start training you on navigation? What do they start with?
Give you a book to read, which until recently was in the house. I don't know where it is now.
Is that the navigation or RAF navigation manual sort of thing?
Well, it would have been in those days, yes. In actual fact, it covered every subject we were going to do. But, my memories were that we see every day to go down and have an hour or 2 hours on navigation and theory of navigation and things like that. So it was more theory than practical.
More theory. So what level, what are you talking about with navigation? Is this the theory of dead reckoning then?
Well, a dead reckoning, of course, you can work out yourself, can't you? That's easy. You talk in terms of the compass, deviation on the compass. There's something else, I can't remember what it was. There's two things you've got to correct on a compass before you use it. Deviation's one of them. I don't know. I told you my memory was bad.
You're doing fine. And what about allowing for wind drift?
Oh, you've got to allow for wind. Of course you have.
And they'd tell you how to work that out, would they?
Yeah, probably. Well, yes. And, of course, later on you could learn how to get the wind drift yourself.
But that is in the future. Right. So a bit of theoretical navigation training, but not too much of it. Now, what else? You mentioned guard duties. Let's pick that up.
Oh, we did guard duty.
Tell me about guard duty.
Well, you guarded your own place, so that was it. And they actually gave you 5 rounds of ammunition. And what they gave one chap on one occasion, a Sten gun, and he fired it in the middle of the night. He fired it into the swimming pool down below. He thought he saw somebody swimming, so he fired it.
Now, had you had any training on the Sten or the rifle?
No, not really. I knew how to load one and use the bolt action. Yeah, I could do that and I could aim it, I imagine. But I don't think not until I was in Canada, did I ever fire a rifle.
So, what other training? Would you do more aircraft recognition?
Aircraft recognition.
Was it any different?
No, exactly the same. Probably a different silhouettes you got. Probably better equipment to put it over on. We also did...
Were you good at aircraft recognition by then? I mean, could you actually recognise what was flashed
around? Yeah, I could recognise everything that was in the book. Of course, you've got to remember, these bloody things came up so often, the same shot. Maybe it's at a distance and they're doing it... 50th of a second or something like that, you could still recognise. We even included, latterly, we included Russian planes later on. We had the Russian aircraft, which were a bit of a devil, and Japanese, which was even worse.
And you were interested in aircraft, so I presume it was not too onerous for you.
No, it was something I was learning. The whole thing I thought was aiming towards me becoming a good navigator.
Now, any other forms of training you went through at Scarborough?
Well, we did more and more. No, there wasn't a lot more. We did navigation, so we had lessons on navigation. We did guard duty.
What about recreations? What would you do for fun?
Recreation? What was that?
Would they ever allow you into the town?
Oh, yes, you're allowed into the town.
What would you do there?
Nothing. We couldn't afford it. They didn't have any money. What would be on there? 1 and 6 a day. Didn't go far. You couldn't have a couple of pints of beer, couldn't you?
Did you drink at all? Or
no, I was...
Were you teetotal? Or just
I was teetotal when I joined the Air Force. Not now.
But you were was it really on religious or just you didn't drink?
I'd never been brought up to it. Never had it. I think it had a sip of something, a beer or something. Oh, my father used to always buy a bottle of Coburn's Port at Christmas. And I might have had a sip of that.
But effectively...
Effectively, I was a sober man.
Now, how did you get on with the other recruits? I mean, were they from the same sort of background as yourself? Did you?
Yeah, most of them were. We once, when we were down in London, we once had a tea leaf, a petty thief, but he just disappeared. He was suddenly collected and went to the guard room, and we never saw him again.
Now that was a one-off.
A one-off.
But all most of them grammar school boys? Or
most of them were grammar school, secondary school boys, yeah.
And did you make any special pals, or was it just sort of ships that pass in the night?
Well, I made pals when I was at Scarborough. I made one chap, and I knew him for best part of a year. And then sometime we got to a stage where he was posted one way and I went the other. I wrote to him a couple of times, and I just wonder what was on my chest, crawling in my chest. And then it all fell through. No, you didn't. And you weren't with people... The longest time we were with people was when we were at Scarborough. That was 12 weeks. So we had 12 weeks. So you got to know the people there. I was friendly with a lot of lads there. And some of them went with me to Canada. Some went to my station. Then they were split again. It seemed as though the Air Force had a rule not to let you stay with your friends too long.
Now, what about the instructors? How did you get on with them? I mean, what did you think of their methods?
Well, the instructors we got at Scarborough were all schoolmasters. They'd been all given flight lieutenant's jobs, and it was a better job in the Air Force as a schoolmaster, and that was better than them wasting their time doing other things. So they were schoolmasters in the Air Force.
And what were they like? Were they good at it?
Yeah, I think they were.
So they knew the stuff themselves and they were good at imparting.
I think at that stage they knew, well, it was quite elementary what they were teaching you. So, you know, if they did that week after week, they would get pretty good at it.
Now, anything else about your time at Scarborough? You're there from what, February 43 to May, June, midsummer?
Yeah, about then. Yeah, that would be about it, May.
Well, we're putting circa on all these.
Oh, so. I tell you what I did. I caught German measles when I was at... And so I had another week in hospital.
Now, German measles was more serious then than it is now, or I believe. Did you get it badly?
Well, I believe it was bad enough to put me in hospital. And it was diagnosed by one of the chaps I was friendly with, he was a trainee doctor, and he joined the Air Force. But he was going to fly, that was his object. He never did, though. He never made it. And he said, you're ill. You've got German measles. So he said, you report sick. So I went down and they said, oh, there's a set of pyjamas, you're staying in. So I was there for a week. But that didn't affect me at all. I still left at the same time as they did.
You weren't back squadded that time?
No, I didn't lose any more. And then they came through with a directive that at this stage there had been such a wastage of people who would have made pilots that from now on you would go to what they called a grading school.
What, even you? No.
Who was a navigator. I could then, if I opted for it, I could go as a navigator. So I said, oh, I'll go as a pilot. And I was sent from then, I was supposed, when I had a week's leave or 2 weeks leave, and then went back, and I went to Derby.
Now, do you know what the grading school's name, number, or
I know that there's Toyota had their factory built on my airfield. Yeah, that's the only. It was near Derby.
Well, they can try and look it up from that. I mean, there won't be that many. Now, what happened when you got to the grading school? That's when you're going to get a quick trial, 10 hours, 12 hours of flight.
Yeah, 12
to see
hours.
Whether you can be a pilot.
That's it. Right. Because they had so many people going as navigators and so many people going as pilots who washed out. They wanted to fill the ranks again. That's all it meant to do.
And they were allowing you to even though you were down as a navigator, to have a go.
That's it. Well, that's, yes, that's what we did.
Now, how did they start you then? I mean, presumably, what were they, tiger moths?
Tiger moths. You were told to go, the morning you were there, because we were billeted out in Repton Old School. Now, Repton Old School is where a famous actor in those days made the film, didn't he? And we were in the same room as which he uses as a class. So that was our dormitory, with all these antique heads hanging around the walls. Robert Donat played the schoolmaster.
But he wasn't there. Mr.
Chips, that's right. But he wasn't there when we were there. We were using his schoolroom as a dormitory. And we were told one morning to take your gym shoes with you, because you'd be flying today. So your first trip would be on a tiger moth, and you put your sand shoes on so you could feel the rudder bar with your feet.
Now, is this an air familiarization flight where you're actually just being taken up to feel it, or is it a first lesson?
You took off and you flew, you did a couple of circuits, and before you'd finished the day, you were sort of roughly handling the aeroplane. You were allowed to fly it. The other bloke was sitting with his hand round the stick in the back, and You didn't land on the first time, but after about
were you in the front? I thought you were in the back.
We were in the back.
Yes, that's it. Yeah, he was in the front.
He was in the front.
The instructor was in the front.
He was the instructor in the front. Yeah.
Now tell me how so. What are you doing? What are the skills you're learning, and what do you remember? And I know you don't go on to become a pilot, do you? You don't go on to become a pilot. So
I did. I was a pilot.
Oh, you did. So you succeeded. Well, in that case, that's. Sorry, I've been misinformed by it.
Oh, Jim said. Well, Jim's informed you a lot of things you're not right.
Now, tell me about. So this is important then. What are the first things you're learning? I mean, I don't know whether you could take us. How do you take off then? What do they have to get through? What's the method of taxiing?
Well, you've got to push the accelerator forward, or the throttle. You push the throttle forward, get up speed, and at a certain speed, it will unstick itself. You don't try to force it off before that, otherwise you won't get off, because you create more drag over the wings. You don't want that, so you want the optimum lift on the wings, which is, if you'd done all this nonsense we'd learned before, you knew at 15 degrees you would take off, and you had to feel use of the elevators, which are on the back end, which tends to guide you in the air, or down or up. And you've got ailerons on the wings, which turn you. And a combination of both makes it work better. Things like that. Initially, you did all this. And then after that, it was a case of getting as much, giving you as much time as they could.